All right. Well, if there is one good upshot of the current state of humanity, it's that we're all in our homes, and so you get to have us twice a week. That's right, the Gavin Jules Show for the foreseeable future. You get us twice a week. That's exciting, right, Jules?
That's exciting, man. I'm really excited. This morning I woke up. There was something a bit different. You know, that was good.
Now I'm seeing you. I'm assuming you're near the you're near, that's what, like, the attic of your house. I'm assuming that's the incline of your roof with one of those fancy, what are those called? Are those called Velux windows?
Velux windows, exactly. Yeah, in our loft where my office is. You know, nice.
Now your next door neighbor was drilling, and your neighbor. Now I'm just wondering, like, I'm assuming your next door neighbor is not a construction worker. So why is he or she drilling in the backyard? Has oil been found in Enfield?
No, but they
are... Is she going to start fracking too?
No, but they're just working on their house. They're doing a bit of home improvement, shall we say, in the kitchen. And I think that's why they're drilling. But good on them, because it's been going on for a long time. Like, not the drilling, the home improvement stuff.
All right, well, good for them. I don't care about them as long as they don't bother the show. Otherwise, I'm going to ask you to go and unleash the dogs on them. The other good thing about this whole thing is I've started tidying, and because, you know, during the year, there's so much going on, and you find things. And I found another piece of memorabilia. This one's actually football-related. I have no idea if this is going to look like rubbish as I hold it up to the camera, and my producer, Freddie, will yell at me for doing this. And obviously, if you listen to the podcast, you can't see this, but Jules... Can you make this out?
So this is World Cup 94. Oh my God. Italy against Ireland, which is, I believe, the last 16 or the quarterfinals. I can't remember.
No, this was a group stage game.
Oh, the last game of the group stage.
Yes. And I went there purely as a fan. I was in college.
You were 20?
At the time.
Were you 20 by then?
Yes, I had turned 20. In fact, that would be the summer that I turned 21 and became legal. But anyway, do you remember the outcome of that game? Do you remember who won?
So Ireland won 1-0.
That's very good. That's very good. And you know who scored?
Ray Houghton.
Oh, yes, yes.
I remember this World Cup. That's the first World Cup I properly remember.
That's awesome. Yeah. No. And weirdly, a few years after that, I started working with Ray Houghton at TalkSport. Worked for him for many years. Of course, Liverpool legend, Republic of Ireland. Except, I don't know. Can we call Ray a Liverpool legend? I mean, we use that term for Dalglish and Hansen. It's right, long time Liverpool player. Okay,
yeah,
very good player.
But yeah, it was very good for them.
But yeah, it was pretty awesome. That was at Giant Stadium. Of course, the old Giant Stadium, and quite a day. Wow. Now all I remember was 60,000, what it felt like, super loud. I think probably liquored up, many of them, Ireland fans, going, you know what they were singing? Over and over
and
again.
And Italy were already through, right? So you were not too upset that they lost?
No, quite the opposite, no. So I'm going from memory here, and I stand to be corrected. No, Italy were far from through. I think this was the... first or the second game. Italy were in a group with... you know, we're going to look really stupid if I get this wrong. Italy were in a group with Norway, the Republic of Ireland, and I believe Mexico. And
yes,
so they lost this game.
Right.
They beat Mexico. And then they were... Or maybe they drew with Mexico. I don't know. But then they played... when they played Norway, the famous thing is the goalkeeper, Paluca, got himself sent off.
Oh, yeah, I remember that game.
And then there's a brilliant moment. Rigo Sacchi was the Italy manager, where obviously he gets sent off because he came out outside his box on some big, slow Norwegian dude. And the fun thing about this was Sacchi has to take off a striker. So Sacchi being weird and being Sacchi, who's the one striker he takes off? Roberto Baggio. With Italy down to 10 men and chasing the game. Rather than taking off the other striker, who I assume was Signori or somebody. And there's this great thing where Baggio, who's normally pretty unemotional, you can see him, he turns around, and he's thinking to himself, man, this guy is freaking crazy. He's a freaking lunatic. And so he trots off the pitch, and then I think it was Dino Baggio scored the goal in that game, and then they overcome Norway, and then they go all the way to the final, and that's a story for another time. So that's my piece of memorabilia. I encourage you to come up with a piece of memorabilia. It doesn't have to be football-related for next week. So today on our show, we're going to hopefully speak to Sid Lowe, who's going to tell us a little bit about what's going on in Spain, Barcelona, whatnot, Tebas, all that good stuff. But we're going to start maybe by talking about situation here in England. We'll try to get some of the Corona stuff out of the way so we don't depress everybody. Jules, some big news from the National League.
Yes, they decided to basically stop their season and ask the FA for their help to see what they could do with the current season. So you won't play the remaining. I looked it up last night for the ESPN TV show. It was, I think, 7 or 8 games to play, depending if you had a game in hand or not, for those teams. So that doesn't mean the season is void. I mean that right now there won't be any more games in the National League, which is the fifth tier of English football, the fifth division. And then they have to work out if you void the season or if you still send the teams up that were first and second. You've got two teams going up into the fourth division, which is the League Two. What you do with relegation as well, all of that to sort out. But obviously, I think, Gab, this could have obviously repercussions on the fourth, third division of English football, maybe even the Championship, the second division. I don't think it could hit the Premier League. But just to think the domino effect of relegation and promotion and what they're going to do in the National League could have an impact on the rest, no?
Totally. And whoever's bottom of League Two, and I have no idea who it is, but you know what?
Stevenage. It's Stevenage.
Oh, you do know. Okay, there you go. Yeah. Stevenage Borough. I guess they're, regardless, I mean, you're kind of in a weird situation because they know they're not going to get relegated. And so if League Two does come back to play, what are all these teams playing for other than to go watch football and whatever? There's nothing at stake there is basically the point you're making apart from promotion and playoffs, right?
Yeah, I think so. And also, if they avoid the season and say, okay, we're going to go next year again with the same 24 teams that have been playing this season in the National League. So Barrow, for example, who are top of the table, won't be promoted into League Two. Same with the teams that are in the playoff for that second spot to go up. And you've got teams like Notts County, like Yeovil, the two teams who went down last summer from the League Two to the National League. Again, you tell them, this is exceptional circumstances. You have to stay another season at least in the National League. But if that season is void, then maybe other leagues like League Two, League One, even the Premier League, and we saw Rio Ferdinand the other day saying that this current season in the Premier League should be void. Maybe then others would think, actually, that's not a bad idea. If you void it all, there's no promotion, no relegation anywhere. You all go again in 2021 season with all the same teams in all the same divisions and everything. And maybe that could give a few ideas to other people in other leagues.
I don't think that's a good idea. I don't know.
I don't think that's a good idea either. But I think it's, if they do it,
I mean, I think so much of this talk has just been so self-interested. You know, like if you're Leeds United, you're saying, no, let's take the table as it is now. If you're, you know, West Ham or somebody fighting to avoid relegation, oh no, let's void the season and we all stay up.
Yeah, of course.
I mean,
of course.
I'd like to see more creative solutions also, and maybe just, I'm just an incurable optimist. I don't, as you know, I don't want the season continuing and saying we have to finish this season. But you can come up with a better, more logical, more exciting way to wrap this up. You mentioned, is it Barrow who are, do you even know where Barrow is? I know there's a Barrow in Alaska. Do you know where Barrow is in this country?
That one. It would be somewhere in central England. I always say when someone asks me a town,
it's in the Midlands. Yes, okay, it's always in the Midlands. I know. maybe like when it comes back, there's not time to play a league schedule, but maybe they play, I don't know, home and away against Stevenage or whatever. Like,
yeah, maybe you could find a way.
There are better solutions. Oh, our producer Freddie on the little tiny screen, which I can't see, he's holding up a map, which, from what I can tell, if my geography is correct, Barrow is somewhere, what is that? Is that somewhere Wales? Can you see that? Is that somewhere like Wales, in between sort of Wales and like that bit of England that juts out?
In the northwest of England, I think.
Yeah, like towards Carlisle. But it's like in between.
So not central England, but. You know,
in between Lancaster and Carlisle type.
But you know, the thing about whatever is going to happen in the National League and all the other leagues is that not everyone would be happy about whatever the decision is, right? You can't have the one decision that would make everyone happy.
No,
that's impossible,
not.
I think.
Now, and that's why the one thing I hope, and you know, regular readers will know this, is people are really talking, oh, there's going to be so many lawsuits and whatever. And you know what? You know what I think of lawyers, right? there are very few lawyers who are good because it says so in the Bible. It's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a lawyer to enter the kingdom of heaven. But there are some good lawyers. That's very few in the Bible. Yes, you should look it up. Read your Bible.
Yeah.
We'll hopefully be speaking to one of the good ones, my boy Daniel G., who's a sports lawyer, wrote a book, Done Deal, which kind of explains the nuts and bolts of how transfers happen, how a lot of things happen. We'll hopefully have him coming up soon, and I don't know. I don't know that he has any power over other sports lawyers, but if he does, and if you're listening, Daniel, please, get your guys out of the way, because these people, they're kind of like vultures, you know, making money with frivolous lawsuits. I don't want that to happen. I just want reach a consensus. Not everybody's happy. Deal with it. Let's make sure that the clubs that need to survive do survive, and let's freaking move on with the rest of our lives. Jules, as promised, we have with us Sid Lowe.
We do indeed.
And today's a special day for you, Sid, because it is the birthday of the football club you support.
Yeah, Real Oviedo's birthday. So happy birthday, Real Oviedo.
Now, we're supposed to talk to you about big topics and stuff that generate traffic. And we're going to do that and ask you about Barcelona in a minute. But first, just because it is Real Oviedo's birthday, and just to upset the apple cart a little bit, can you give us the 45-second version without boring us all about why you're an Oviedo fan?
I can make it even shorter than 45 seconds just to completely buck the trend. Very, very simple. In 1996-97, the first year that I lived in Spain, I lived in Oviedo. They were a first division team at the moment. They are not now. They haven't been since 2001, but that is why. That Oviedo team, by the way, beat the Atletico Madrid team that won the double 4-1. It was probably the greatest Saturday night in history.
And who is their derby against?
The derby is against Sporting Gijón.
Ah. And, all right, I've run out of fun Oviedo-related things to ask. I was going to turn to Brian Oviedo in a minute. So let's talk about Barcelona instead. Because a few days ago, I was reading these reports secondhand. I have no inside knowledge on this. By the way, that is a Real Oviedo mug. As you know, Sid collects mugs.
It's actually not. This is just a plain white mug, which is very, very, very disappointing for me to have made that mistake. However, I do have a TSFB mug.
Oh, yeah. Plug your own podcast, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. You walked straight into it. I know.
Next time I do the show, I might. You know what? Next time I do the show, I might do it wearing the TSFB hoodie that I bought. Except, of course, those hoodies. Yes, but those hoodies are all built for reedy, thin people like Slenderman. So even if you get the sizing, it looks kind of rubbish, right? Anyway.
Right, Barcelona. Go back to Barcelona.
Yeah, go back to Barcelona. So I read before the weekend about how Bartomeu met with the senior players, presumably he video conferenced Messi, and basically, in principle, they had agreed to a reduction in wages temporarily to deal with a pandemic. Now today I read that might not be the case. What's the deal?
Well, the deal is that they're discussing the various options with them. Now, I think as well it's important to try and contextualise at the risk of going on for a very long time, right? Which obviously would be very unlike me. It's important to try and contextualise the different potential solutions here. Now, the government rules in Spain, labour law in Spain, allows what's known as an ERTE, an ERTE, which allows companies effectively to unilaterally make changes to either wages or job positions, in other words, make sackings in extreme circumstances. And of course, this is an extreme circumstance. What Barcelona are proposing is not quite the same, at least with their athletes, because this is something that goes to the football staff, both in the male and female team, also the B team and the under 19s, but it goes for their football salad team, for their handball, for their basketball, for their, there's another sport they play, roller hockey teams, right? And what this is them discussing with the players a way of reducing the wages because they have a very, very serious financial crisis coming, I think. And this is a way of saying to players, we need to do something, and can you make a gesture? And they were told that the players were open to these suggestions. Now, the initial idea that was proposed was one in which the players would take a 70% pay cut for as long as Spain was on lockdown, which at the moment is on course for being a month. It may well be longer because we don't know if it'll be expanded. And after that, they would go back to 100%, right? Now, the reason why I say this isn't necessarily a solution or doesn't necessarily explain everything, because this is not the same as an ERTE. This is not the same as what will probably happen to the staff at the club, people who work in the shops, people who work on the food stalls and all that sort of stuff. And I can't help feeling that this is more about a gesture than anything else, right? Not least because, let's go back to that point, a 70% pay cut for the time in which we are on lockdown, and after that it goes back to 100%. But how can you be in a position where you close that deal when after that you don't know if you come back and you play a league or you don't play a league? You don't know if you come back and you play in the Champions League or not. You don't know if you come back in a situation in which the club may well be denied a significant proportion of its TV money. And way almost certainly will be denied a significant portion of its match day revenue. And so this can, I think, could never really be more than a, if you like, a kind of a short term, almost a gesture more than a economic reality. Obviously it has an economic impact, no doubt about that. The reason why it hasn't happened yet, I can only assume, and I admit at this point that I'm assuming rather than making a judgment call, is that an agreement hasn't yet been reached with players about the best way in which to do this.
All right, so a couple of questions. Obviously, as you know, you mentioned, you know, when we talk about a football club, we focus on the first team, but obviously there's also all the staff at the club, the scouts, the people who run La Masia and whatever. There's a lot of non-playing staff. Barcelona, of course, have all these other teams too. Obviously, the basketball team playing the EuroLeague, they're all professional. Some of these other teams, are the roller hockey guys, are those guys professionals too? And if so, are they expected to also take 70% pay cuts? Or is it just first teamers above a certain amount?
No, this is the point. This is the point that, and this may well, I don't know the answer. This may well be one of the sticking points, but the proposal was that they would fix a percentage. And if it's as high as 70% or if it's another figure, but they would fix a percentage, and that percentage would be a blanket percentage across all of their sports clubs. So in other words, if you're Messi, you're passing up 70% of whatever he makes these days, 35 million. If you're a roller hockey player, you're passing up 70% of far less. But obviously, in absolute terms, the impact is gigantic.
Of course, this is so stupid.
Which is why, is another reason why I think, this is one of the reasons why you can reach an agreement with the first team captains in the football team, but then when you take this proposal to the guys who play futsal and roller hockey and handball, and maybe, as you've already rightly pointed out, not so much basketball because they are well paid, they might say, well, hang on. Yeah, I'm offering up the same percentage as Messi, but it's just not the same impact.
I'm sorry. This is just so twisted. This is like sort of flat tax nonsense. I mean, surely some of these guys really struggle to make, presumably struggle to make a living. So why would you possibly come up with such a plan and make it public? This is why Bartomeu freaking confuses the hell out of me. And this whole club, the way it's run, confuses the hell out of me. Even before, we had a story last week about them invoking Article 17 as if it was like 2005 all over again to get Neymar, all this nonsense. Who are the grown-ups in the room?
Gab, I'm so glad you said that, because you just mentioned exactly the thing that I was going to mention anyway, but I wasn't going to mention the reason why I was mentioning it. But I was talking to a friend the other day, a sports lawyer, about that Article 17, right? And he was talking me through it, because I admit, as not being a legal expert, I didn't fully understand the mechanisms here, how this works and so on. And he was talking me through it, and he said to me, look, no one in their right mind in this position would use that article. No one in their right mind. And there was a pause, and he said, but this is Barcelona. and this is exactly what I was going to bring up, because as you say, it doesn't make any sense. And it's yet another example of a scenario in which you think, all right, on the face of it, I can see this, but let's start to pull at the threads a bit. And it doesn't work. And I think you can do 70% gesture from the players, right, in the first team, in the football team. But you can't really do that to the women's team. because the amount of money means that 70% is absolutely brutal, the impact. The same you can't do, as you've already mentioned, with all the other sports. And by the way, let's take it to the next stage, shall we? This is 70% as a way, I think, of making a gesture saying, look, the footballers are making an effort here. That's not going to be anywhere near as brutal as the impact of the ERTE if that then gets applied to office staff, reception right. staff, shop staff, and all of those kind of people. And I don't know about you, and this is at the risk of me sounding that word that always gets used in Spanish. What's the word? Oh crap, I've forgotten how I translate it in English.
Say it in Spanish.
In Spanish, but it's they always call it. They accuse you of being a demagoguery. I don't know what it doesn't
being
really
a
work.
Demagogue, yes. Demagogue,
yeah, but in English, yeah. It doesn't kind of carry the same way. But that idea that you're deliberately saying something that's kind of populist and easy right. to say and doesn't deal with the reality. But at the risk of being one of those people, I don't know about you, and at the risk of this being oversimplistic, I don't know about you, but if we see, and I think we will, a lot of big football clubs taking these kind of economic measures, right, releasing staff, sacking people, taking pay cuts, and then in the summer going back into the transfer market and saying, here, let's spend 100 million euros on a player, it's going to sit... It's going to sit really uneasily, isn't it?
Sid, I made this point in my column, and sorry, Jules, and I'll chuck it back to you, but, you know, I'm going to be a bit of a demagogue here myself. You're 100% right. And even this whole thing with the losses, in Italy they're saying, oh, it's going to be more than a billion here in England. They put a same out. Tebas, of course, makes it seem as if, you know, 800 million, 1 billion, whatever the hell it is. KPMG put out a study where they said the worst-case scenario. Guys... The reality is, if you actually look at the numbers, yes, we're going to take a hit. The absolute worst case scenario, and this means not playing a single minute of any game, not behind closed doors, nothing. It means all the TV companies demanding all their money back, saying, you know, you've played 75% of the season, so we're only going to pay you 75%, now give us our money back. It means sponsors saying, oh, well, then, you know, we want money back as well because... All of a sudden, you know, we're not getting exposure, right? That is the absolute worst case scenario. You're talking about a 25% hit on the budget for the whole season. That is what we're that is the absolute worst scenario. So I don't have a problem, and obviously some clubs, it makes a huge difference to them, and they won't be able to survive unless these sacrifices are made. But I want to see all the numbers, and I want everything to be very, very clear, because I don't want to have a situation where players are taking pay cuts, not to help staff, but to go and help owners so they don't put money in their pocket, or exactly, in the case right. of, or so that agents can go and do deals in the summer, which, you know, which benefits certain people, that we get, you know, more of this, in Barcelona's case, more of this Karasin, Chigrinsky, Trincao now nonsense going on, right? I want stuff public.
I hear you both. I'm going to play devil advocate here. The wage bill of the first team at Barcelona is 77% of the budget. They need to find a solution anyway. They can't continue like this when they have no revenue coming in, right?
Jules, this is exactly why Barcelona are the one team that we're talking about doing this at the moment, because they're already in trouble. The reason this situation... Yeah. Now, look, they cannot be blamed for this situation. They cannot be blamed for the health crisis, and they cannot be blamed for the economic impact of that health crisis. But the reason they are on the edge already was because of their management of this. And as you said, it was 77%, I think, two seasons ago. I think it went down 68% last year. And the planning was for the wage bill, I think, to be 61% this year's budget, which hasn't yet been announced. Obviously, that now won't happen. It'll be higher than 61%. But that's already too high. Even without this situation going on, it's already too high. There's also one other little thing that I wanted to throw in here, which is that, as Gab, you were talking about the impact of TV companies saying, right, you only pay 75% of the season, we're only going to give you 75% of the money, right? And that has been presented, as you rightly say, by Tebas in particular, as being, this is what's happening. It's, I think Tebas claimed it was... Was it Tebas claimed 678 million euros worth of impact?
Yeah,
direct
like
impact, I think, was the figure, right? I do not buy the argument that a TV company immediately says, right, unilaterally, you give this back.
Exactly.
End of story. That will be challenged. It may well become a legal case. And also, by the way, those TV companies, they need the football clubs. They need the leagues. They want that deal next season. So it's never as simple as saying, I want 25% of my money back. Yeah. Because if those TV companies play really hardball, what are football clubs going to do? they're going to do what they're already planning to do in the not too distant future anyway. Said, okay, then you don't get my rights. I stream my rights on Spurs.com or on RealMadrid.com or on Barca.com, and I do it, and I produce it, and I make the money, yeah. And you have no business at all. There is no interest for TV companies now to unilaterally go in really, really hard on the football clubs.
I completely agree, and I think it's also a very similar argument with the sponsors, right? I was trying to think of Barcelona sponsor, but then I thought of Rakuten, which might not be the best example, but what club sponsor? Okay, let's call it Pepe's Peanuts or something in Spain, right? What sponsor is going to say, "Oh, Barcelona, I was going to pay you $2 million for this season for that little piece of hoarding, but now since we're not on television for these months, you need to give me $500,000 back." And of course, that means that you're going to lay off, 10 ladies who work the checkout tails at the Barcelona club shop as a result. I mean, is this good for a sponsor's image? Is this good for a sponsor's branding? No, of course it's not. So before we talk pay cuts, let's have all the figures. Let's see if this money comes in or not. If you want to say a willingness to take a pay cut, if you want to get people to commit, but getting them to not to take the pay cut now, I think is completely, completely absurd and premature. Sid, stay well, stay safe. Our producer Freddie is giving us the signal that we have to let you go. But hopefully you will join us again. And, happy birthday, Oviedo. Cumpleaños feliz. Whatever it is that you're saying. Yes. Yeah, there you go.
That's the one. That's the one.
All right, let's move on to what's become a favored time suck in these difficult times. But it's weirdly addictive. I kind of find myself spending way too much time on this. Thank you to everybody who responded. Last show we did the A-team 11. Reminder of the ground rules. It's your 11 has to be in a reasonable formation, has to be a reasonable team. Players whose last names start with the letter B. I don't want to get into stupid conversations about, we already have one. I have this one wonderful guy who follows me on Twitter who points out all my mistakes, and he was like, "Oh, but you had Alisson Becker, but his last name is Becker." You know, we talked about this. Yeah. My word and your word, Jules, is final on this. Bruno Fernandes doesn't get in because he goes on the F team. Okay,
yeah.
It's whatever the person's most commonly known as, right? So if we were doing a historical one and we were doing the Z team, then Zico would be in it, but he would be in there as Zico, not as, what was it? Is it Antunes Coimbra or whatever the hell his last name was? Yeah. So, okay. So over to you, Jules, because you're running point on this.
Yeah. So like you said, many thanks to all the people who sent their team, and there were loads, for this B team. I've picked a few of them and give them a shout. We had Ross Quinn, who had Buffon in goal, a back three of Bonucci, Daily Blind, and Yuri Bershish, PSG legend, love that. Then Bradley, Busquets, Blaszczykowski in midfield.
Sorry, wait. Can Bershish in the back three? Isn't he more of a left back?
Yeah, he's intelligent enough to play as a sweeper in there. I like Ross Quinn's thinking there.
All right.
Then you have Bernardo and Gareth Bale. And
wait, is that Bernardo Silva or is that the other Bernardo?
No, I think it's Bernardo Silva, not the Bernardo from Brighton.
Are we allowing Bernardo Silva?
So it's Bernardo on his shirt, but really, this should be Silva, his surname. Like David Silva. You wouldn't have David Silva as D for David, right?
Yeah, I think we now need to disqualify him on account of that.
So Ross Quinn, it was good. And then he had Gabigol as in Barbosa up front and Benzema.
Again, Gabigol, I'm sorry, he's Gabigol. He's not Barbosa.
I know. So Ross Quinn, it was good thinking. I picked him up just for Bershish, really, to be fair. I love Philly Kay, who is clearly a big Sheffield United fan because he had Basham, Baldock, and Son de Berge in his team.
Ooh, that's good on three him.
And a front three of Bell, Benzema, and Bernadeschi, which I liked.
I'm surprised he didn't try to shoehorn Oliver McBurney in there. But, let's get this out of the way for Vans, Does, Mets.
Yeah, so De Bruyne is a D. It can't be a B. We had a few guys sending us De Bruyne in their team. Like, come on. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Tazier gives us a good 4-3-3 formation, I think. Buffon in goal, Bellerin, Bonucci, Boateng, Bernat at the back, Busquets, Banega, and Julian Brandt in the midfield three, which I like. I like the idea of it. And then up front, Bale, Benzema, and Wissam Ben Yedder. So I think this is a pretty, pretty solid team from Tazier there.
Yeah, you know, Benzema, Ben Yedder together. I mean, it's just two center forwards, huh?
Well, yeah, but you see what I did with them in my team coming up. Marcus, clearly, shout out to Christmas. Buffon or Alisson Becker in goal. Of course, you can have Alisson Becker in goal. Anyway, Bellerin.
You can't have Alisson
Bonucci,
Becker
Boateng and Baines at the back. Then, Bender, Busquets, and Brandt again, and Belotti, Benzema, and Bale up front. I mean, again, Belotti, Benzema, it's a bit like Ben Yedder, Benzema.
No, it's not, because Belotti worked so hard. Belotti's work played up front with Simone Zaza, of course. So, yeah, you know, sure, that works.
Okay, this one, Azim, and just a few more. Azim is a good one. Becker in goal. Again, I've got nothing to say against that. I know you have a back four of Bellerin, Bailly, Boateng, and Baines. Love the
now, can I say something about all this? You can't put the big names in there. Okay, so Bellerin, right? Permanently injured. Baines, 50 years old, probably injured. I honestly don't know. Eric Bailly has played, what, one more game for Manchester United than you have in the last 2 years.
I know, but you need
why
to
why do you think these teams are good? They're not good.
They're good, but like
they're not good.
Maybe things that when, you know, when they're all fully fit. Listen to this midfield three. Bentaleb, Bernard from Everton, and then Atem Ben Arfa. He's the only one I think that's put Ben Arfa. Even me, I haven't put Ben Arfa. Ben Arfa is my boy. Even me, I don't have Ben Arfa in my team. And then he's got Bale and Benzema up front with Ryan Babel. I mean, Asim, who's a Liverpool fan, I think, this is a pretty, pretty good shot. You've got a few more with Brozovic, Barella, and Benacer in midfield, which I think is pretty good as well.
That's the all Milan midfield, as in like the city of Milan.
You've got a couple with Jude Bellingham, the wonder kid at Birmingham, the 16-year-old.
The one who nobody's seen play.
Which is a good chap. I've seen him play, and he's pretty awesome. You've got Bonucci at the back. He will be in my team. Who else do we have? Bergwijn from Spurs is in there. Bentancur from Juventus is in there as well.
Last season, maybe.
Bastoni at the back, one of the revelation of Serie A with Inter this season.
All right.
I like this one. I like this one from JW. He's got Bulka in goal, the PSG third goalkeeper. Then he's got a back three of Bailly, Bonucci, and Bartra. Bellerin on as a right wing back, Bernat as a left wing back, Busquets and Benacer, Ross Barkley as a number 10, and then you've got a front two of Benzema and Maron Boadu, the young Dutch striker from AZ Alkmaar. That's a pretty good one.
Boadu, by the way, since you know people often talk about guys who are getting hype, that guy's getting a ton of hype.
Yeah.
Maron Boadu. All right, really can I give you mine?
Okay, give me yours and then I give you mine.
All right, so I've gone with Gigi Buffon for purely sentimental reasons. So,
right. Okay, the guy who had a rubbish season at PSG, you mean? Is that guy?
That was last year.
Oh, that was last year. Okay.
My right back is, drumroll please, George Baldock as well.
Yeah.
I know. I guess he'd have to adapt to playing right back from wing back, but you know what? He can do that. In the middle, I've also gone for Bonucci. I've gone with two playmaking center halves because it's Bonucci. The other one is Chris Basham, also known as Basham Bauer, right?
Basham
also
Bauer,
from Sheffield
indeed.
United, right?
Yep.
Left back, Bernat, because I didn't like any of the other options. I've got a midfield four with two flying wide, young flying wide men. One is Julian Brandt. The other one is Harvey Barnes from Leicester City, simply because every single time Craig Burley, whose name also starts with a B, in fact, he might be my manager. You wouldn't want him as a manager. No, you'd want Craig Burley would be my...
Your team manager. Team manager is good. So he could shout at the players to get on the coach if they're late.
I think he would be the team psychologist because he's so level-headed. He always calls him young Harvey Barnes. I don't know if you noticed, right? Nobody else gets the tag young. It's only Harvey Barnes. I think he's got a bit of a thing for this guy. In midfield, of course, Ever Banega for the simple reason.
Yeah.
Just his off-the-pitch story is so absolutely wonderful from his from his cam incidents to the toilet incident.
Of course.
There's so many. Just look it up. His Wikipedia is just, it's just quite a ride. Ismael Benacer, because I think the guy is the boss.
Yeah.
The guy is awesome.
And he also plays for Milan, which, you know, you cannot
know. He's troubled time. Yeah. And by the way, Benacer, he is one of those guys who, you know, at Arsenal, whoever failed to see that, yeah, they're probably
come
no longer
on,
at the club.
Don't get me started on that. Come on. Don't get me started on that.
I'm assuming whoever it is no longer at the club, yeah?
Don't get me started. Right, He was really young. Go on.
So that's why we get rid of him. Okay, it's fine. Up front, I went with Karim Benzema. Part of it is because I've been writing a very big piece for the website about Cristiano Ronaldo and his evolution over the years. And you kind of realize that as awesome as Cristiano Ronaldo is, of course, I don't want to have a go at him. He becomes exponentially more productive whenever he plays with Karim Benzema. So big props to Karim Benzema.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. The second one is a guy I never would have put. He's the guy who, he's kind of like, for me, he's kind of like the Sergio Ramos of strikers. He just looks like an absolute something that rhymes with lick or pick. He's nasty. He's physical. He's totally the kind of guy you want to have on your team, but you hate playing against. He's got a girl's name on top of that. He's half Austrian. Yes, right. He's the second Barnes on this team. Say hello to Ashley Barnes. I'm imagining my Ashley Barnes, Karim Benzema, all action, all energy, all physical front line. That would be awesome, right?
Yeah. I mean, my team will boss your team easy. I'll have, obviously, Alisson Becker in goal.
You can't have him. His name is Alisson. No, as punishment, you have to have Marcin Bulka.
I love Bulka, who's fantastic for PSG, PSG legend. Then I've got a back three of Bonucci, obviously. And then the two Bender brothers, because it's so cool to have two brothers in the same team.
Yeah, Bonucci and two Benders against Ashley Barnes. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, I was tempted
by the Benders too, but then I figured I would have too many Germans in my starting 11.
Yeah, I love my back three of the two Benders and Bonucci. Then I've got Bellerin, right wing back.
Come on. Get him, Bellerin, just because he's a nice guy and we like him.
I've got faith in him. He's stylish as well. I love him. Bernat as a left wing back. Then my midfield two would be Busquets and Banega, which really excite me to the limit.
Are you excited by 2020 Busquets, really?
Not 2020 Busquets. But when I put Busquets in my team, I'm thinking like Busquets, you know, okay. like 2009 to 11 Busquets. Okay. Or even to 15, I guess. And then my front three, I have to have Gareth Bale because Mrs. L, being Welsh, if I don't put him in my team and she listens, she's going to kill me. And this is not a time for divorce. Karim Benzema in the center, as you said, because he's a ledge. And then as a left winger, I've got Jeremy Boga.
That's a good one.
Best dribbler for me in Europe right now. Lighting up Serie A in a Sassuolo team that is doing well, mostly thanks to him. So I knew you would appreciate it. So
Jeremy Boga. Oh my God. We could have gone with his teammate Berardi as well.
Yeah.
And then have two Sassuolo Bs in there, the same way we had two Sheffield United Bs.
Yeah. And just before we finish, a big shout to Cheshire Gunner, who said Bentner time 11. I think he deserves to be on the show. That is brilliant.
By the way, do we know if Nicholas has retired?
He hasn't officially announced it. I think obviously he left Copenhagen, didn't he? But
yeah, obviously.
I don't think he scored a goal in like 50 games or something. Even at training, he couldn't score.
Do you think we should get him on here, Nicholas? I know you're a regular listener.
Let's try.
Please hit us either one of us on. I think you have my number, but if not, you can hit me up on Twitter, please. We will very happily have you on, and Julian will be nice to you if you come on with us. All right, enough B-teams. Jules, how about some quick hits? It's what the people want. It's what people need. Let's go. All right, our main man, Rob Dawson, he's reporting that Manchester United are pushing again for Jadon Sancho this summer. Your thoughts on this? I'm assuming you're not going to tell me that, he's a bad signing, right?
No, of course not. He would be perfect for them, as you know, even if Daniel James has done okay.
Daniel James.
Let me finish. You'll
wash your
finish.
Mouth out if you mention Daniel James in the same sentence as Jadon freaking Sancho.
Have I? I haven't. I was okay. About to say that he's done okay for his first season there, but he needs something better. And our listeners know what we think of Daniel James together. And Jadon Sancho would be perfect on that right-hand side with Martial, for example, in the center. And Marcus Rashford on the left-hand side. It looks like United are quite confident they would get him. They're even keeping the number 7 free, the one that belonged to Alexis Sanchez, or maybe other bigger names before him, ready for Sancho when he moves over. Let's not forget, Sancho, a former Man City player, so he would go to the enemy across the city if he made a move to United.
Although, Jadon Sancho is a London boy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
And I don't know, if he comes back after living in the freaking rural region, is he really going to want to go up to Manchester, or would he not just want to come home to London?
Maybe, but maybe he believes that the project at United is a better one than if Chelsea offers something, or I don't know, whoever else. But he will cost over 100 million, we know that, probably maybe around 120 million euros for him. But at his age and with the season that he's having right now, it would be a hell of a signing for anyone, and good on United if they can get him. But let's not forget, they really thought they could get Haaland in January, and they got Ighalo. So, right, Gab, we saw Ashley Young, who's obviously now an Inter Milan player, with some really, really good Twitter messages last night about what it is for him and for people in Italy to go through this pandemic virus.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I got to say this about Ashley Young. It's a little bit like before we talked about Ashley Barnes. He's a player I really didn't like at all. I didn't like it when, remember, way it goes all the way back. I remember he started at Watford. It was fine at Watford. I didn't like him when, because I don't like Martin O'Neill. I didn't like it when Martin O'Neill had him at Villa, and basically he had all these, you know, thug long ball people. He was like the one guy who could play. And he started talking about, you know, how Ashley Young was the best player in the Premier League and blah, blah, blah. He goes to United. I don't, he obviously had a long career at United, versatile, whatever. He had a lot, he's got a lot of the sneaky things that English people supposedly don't do, right? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, of course.
The diving, the gamesmanship, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. That play.
Yeah, but you know what? Now that he's old, even villains become good in our mindset, right? He's done a job. He's been very professional at Inter Milan. He's quite popular among the teammates. And you know what, as a person, and I'm talking about Ashley Young, the person, I think I've spoken to him once in a mix zone in my life. I don't know the guy from Adam. Every time I hear him interviewed, he's incredibly boring and guarded. You know, on the Scholes scale, the Scholes scale is the one where, like, you've got a guy who basically says nothing, doesn't want to be there and whatever, you know, and Scholes ranks 100 on the Scholes scale. I'd say Ashley Young, in my experience, the interviews I've seen, you know, he's certainly in the high 80s, let's put it that way. But he showed a level of humanity and care. He went out on social media. It's a Twitter thread. I retweeted it. It's about, I don't know, like 15 tweets or something, where he kind of explains how the coronavirus and the social distancing is affecting him. Obviously, the north of Italy's been on lockdown for a long time. He's had to deal with it. He goes into extreme detail about how the supermarkets work, the stuff that he's doing when he has to leave the house, what he does with his shopping. And you know what? He didn't need to do that, right? There's no sponsored content in there. This isn't something his, you know, whoever supplies his shoes told him to do. This is just him taking the time, tapping this stuff out on his computer or on his phone. And if he's like most footballers, taking a long time to do it. I'm really taking care about this because you know what? The reality is if Ashley Young says it as an English guy in Italy, people in the UK, his loved ones, are going to take more care for it. So well done, Ashley Young. I feel a little bad about all the times I've criticized him as a footballer, but you know, it was all in good faith. But he showed that as a person, he's worth much more than, you know, 99% of his colleagues out there. Yeah, so
big respect,
so bravo,
for
Ashley Young.
Big respect for Ashley. Maybe when we do our Y team, he might get a space in there. Maybe.
I'm still hoping Luke Young comes out of retirement. We could do a whole Young team. All right, look. we're just cramming in the Manchester United here, right? It's funny. I've realized like all our top three cricket have United connections. But so let's go for another one here. Now, AS today reporting that Zinedine Zidane has apparently indicated that this is the last chance to sign Paul Pogba. It's now or never, basically. I'm assuming the Zizou doesn't mean right now as in now, since the transfer window is open and Pogba's not going anywhere. I'm assuming he means this next transfer window, if we have a transfer window. Are you on board with that? Does this make sense? Is this not so much the signing of him, but there is a certain urgency there because Pogba is actually not getting any younger, right?
No, you're right. And actually next month, he will turn 27 at the end of March. So he's not getting any younger. If you go back a bit to the start of the story, it's Pogba's dream to play for Real Madrid and especially to play under Zidane at Real Madrid. Zinedine Zidane, when he came back to the club last year for his second spell on his transfer wish list, if you want, Paul Pogba was top of the list with Eden Hazard. It could not happen for different reasons. But I think that Real Madrid will go back to a certain extent for Pogba. Whether they can find an agreement with Manchester United, that's a different story. But I think Pogba still really wants to go to Madrid and really wants to play for Zidane there. But where Zidane is right, if he actually really said that, is that if it doesn't happen this summer, I think you're struggling to see if it can happen at Real Madrid, because I think they will go for Kylian Mbappe the following summer. They might even go for Erling Haaland in January 2021. So I don't think there will be much money left for Pogba or even much desire to go for another Galactico for Pogba. So this summer, whenever that transfer window opens or is or whenever it happens, I think this is the window for Pogba to go to Real Madrid. We reported on ESPN that United really believe no clubs can afford him. I think Real Madrid can still definitely afford him if he's the main priority for the summer.
I missed that story. We report United think no club can afford Paul Pogba.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit strange.
Who comes up with this? Like, I mean,
unless they ask for 200 million, if they ask
well, yeah,
for
of course, but yeah, then price, of course, then nobody can afford. But it is an interesting one because, I mean, he had that brief moment when he came back, but Pogba hasn't played with any regularity, right, since September. Yeah. So right now we have no idea what Paul Pogba can do. And that means I think teams aren't going to push out the boat for him. You know, I'm just going to take a gamble. In the original, I think, Mino plan, Pogba was going to come back, play at Euro 2020 for France. France were, in my vision, lose in the semifinals.
Sorry, there's a bug. I didn't hear this. I mean, yeah, France would win the final on July the 12th.
Okay, yeah. All right. But Pogba was going to star, right? Pogba was going to show in the Euros what he could do. Deschamps was going to hand him the keys to the team in midfield. And then all of a sudden, you've got a market, and then you can sell him for a good amount of money if you're United, and everybody's happy, right? And then Real Madrid get excited. Now we're kind of in this weird situation where if you're United or you're Real Madrid, how do you correctly price Pogba? Like, how do you know what a good, real price is? Because from United's perspective, obviously you've added Bruno Fernandes, who, you know, very broad. I mean, I'm sure Bruno Fernandes and Pogba can play together, but very broadly, they do play very similar positions, have comparable skill sets in some way. And you also don't know what's going to happen going forward. You're going to have to start worrying about extending him as well, whether you want to extend him or not. It's a really, really difficult one to sort out for our buddy Ed Woodward. Equally, from Real Madrid's perspective, I get what Zidane is saying age-wise, because I'm not saying that Real Madrid are an old team, but you don't want to have – we made this point about Liverpool in the past. You don't want to have too many guys all getting sort of roughly the same age, you know, all kind of getting old together. And if you look at players – and I might get some of these wrong. I'm going from memory. I don't have the list in front of me. But if you look at players who are going to be sort of 28, 29 or above at Real Madrid, you've got Sergio Ramos, you've got Dani Carvajal has got to be on his way there if he's not there already. Yeah. You've got Casemiro, you've got Toni Kroos.
Varane as well. Varane is the same generation as Pogba, 93.
Oh my God, don't say that about Varane. I thought Varane was going to live to get forever. All right. No, you got Eden Hazard, 28, Gareth Bale. Benzema, you know, you've got this core of players, a lot of whom are on big money. They become more difficult to shift unless you conjure up that Pogba for Gareth Bale swap that would have us all excited.
It's never going to happen.
Are you sure? What if it is Pogba for Gareth Bale? Bale on the left, Sancho on the right, Rashford through the middle, Martial off the bench. No? That yeah. doesn't get you excited? Yeah. Bruno Fernandes sitting them all up?
I don't think that's the direction that United want to go to, signing players like Gareth Bale on 16 million a year.
No. But anyway, I guess put it this way, there's no right answer to it. We don't know when the window's going to read, but I just find it so interesting. How do you actually go and price this up?
You're right. That's a really good point. Right, one more for you, Gab. In the Bundesliga, in Germany, where a lot of clubs and a lot of players are doing a lot of good things in these very difficult circumstances, giving money, giving their own money, giving their time, all sort of things, also agreeing to some wage cuts and things like that. What's going on over there?
Well, we've had a number of clubs, players voluntarily negotiating with the club to reduce their wages, to help them out. We've had... and I'm going to mention them first just because our producer, Freddie, says he's a fan of theirs.
He pretends, he's
very, very much hipstery, right? So yeah, St. Pauli are boring now and they're gone, they're out of everybody's consciousness. So we all have to pretend to be Union Berlin fans. But obviously Union Berlin have done it. Bayern Munich have also done it. Borussia Dortmund either done it or in the process. I think Gladbach as well. I just find it interesting because there's a lot of talk of people reducing wages in other leagues, from Serie A to the Premier League, to, as we talked before with Sid, Barcelona. But it's actually happening in Germany. Like, they're actually doing it. And it's funny because, you know, growing up, I was always taught that the Germans were the selfish villains because they're the ones who would put down their towels on the deck chair. And, you know, most movies, right, the bad guys, notice, in most movies, the bad guys either have English accents or German accents, right? The greatest Christmas movie of all time, Die Hard, right?
The bad Die Hard guy, is not a Christmas movie.
Of course it's a Christmas movie.
It's not a Christmas. It's not about Christmas.
It is Christmas.
It's at Christmas time. It's not about Christmas.
He's getting home for Christmas. It's a movie you traditionally watch every Christmas, right? Oh, what do you watch?
This is not one for now. Okay, keep going with Bundesliga clubs, please.
So anyway, we always thought that the Germans were the villains. But actually, so far, they're the ones who are being the most charitable. Now, I put this question to an agent that I know here in England who wouldn't appreciate it if I mentioned him. And he said, you know, the reality is, I'm sure my guys would take a pay cut here in England. However, so many Premier League teams are profitable. So many Premier League teams are owned by billionaires. When you take a pay cut in Germany, that money is staying within the club, which is ultimately community owned. So if I take a pay cut at Manchester United, it means the Glazers get a bigger dividend, fundamentally,
is
how he put it. And I wonder if to some degree that plays into it as well. And that's why I've said in the past, if people do want to forego their wages in the Premier League, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who want to help. Obviously, a lot of people are doing things privately through various charitable donations, whether for health workers or whatever. But maybe a fund that's targeted and says, you know what, if you give up X percent of your salary, it's going to go directly to help these clubs in League One or League Two or whatever the hell, right? People who need it or health workers or whatever, rather than just, because Premier League clubs are generally all going to stay afloat, even in the worst case scenario. Yeah. And I think that's a difference. Bayern Munich obviously would stay afloat as well, but you are helping the club. It is owned by club members. And I think maybe that's why, I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I think it's great. And I think hopefully more clubs, more players will come forward. And it doesn't have, it's also good that it comes from the players because the clubs could say, I'm the boss here. I pay you wages. You're going to all take a wage cut. Like, I think it will happen in France very soon now. But when it comes from the players themselves, going to their president or going to their CEO or whatever and saying, actually, we've all talked together as a squad and we decided that it would be good for the club if we all take 50%, 30%, whatever, 35% cut on our wages to help out with the club. I think it's even better when it comes from the players than the president.
Now, George, there's a last story that we need to touch upon, which I didn't put in the script, but we talked about last night. The Daily Mail, Mike Keegan, reporting that eight of the clubs in the Premier League top 10 have written to CAS, the Court of Arbitration for Sport, basically asking them they not to give Manchester City, you know, a stay of sentencing or a stay of execution, if you will. Obviously, Manchester City in front of the Court of Arbitration for Sport, that's who they've appealed to because of the 2-year ban after being found in breach of financial fair play regulations. CAS has to decide on this. CAS was going to go and decide on this before the start of the new season. Now we're not 100% sure when the new season starts. And Manchester City, we presume, was going to write to CAS and say, look, if you can't come up with a verdict by the start of the new season, obviously you can't enforce this penalty. This penalty has to be enforced once we've exhausted all our appeals and you're the highest appeal, which seems reasonable to me. 8 of the 10 clubs, which is basically every top 10 club except for Manchester City, and apparently, weirdly, Sheffield United. I don't know, maybe they weren't invited. I don't know. Maybe people don't think that it's going to affect them. They went to CAS asking them, no, you're going to go and apply this regardless. Don't give them a stay pending appeal. How do you feel about this?
I don't know. I can see the point of view of the club. Like they made a mistake. They are at fault. That's why they got the sanction. That's why they got the ban. They got banned for a reason. So if it can't be decided by CAS before we start this, and it's obviously this was all very hypothetical because we don't know when the season will restart and when the following one will start again and when we will ever play in Europe again or whatever. But I think I don't think why we should criticize the clubs who did it, because they feel very strongly that City made a mistake. They have to pay for the mistake. And if CAS cannot properly look into it and decide, it has to go ahead until CAS can do that.
Yeah, I actually disagree quite strongly on this. I guess if you're the club, you got to act in your own self-interest, and your own self-interest, if you're Manchester United or whatever, is to try and like sneak into the Champions League by any means necessary. But you know what? I think this is grossly unfair to Manchester City. I think they have a right to an appeal. They have a right to defend themselves. I don't think the sentencing should become effective until all the appeals are exhausted. I mean, it's pretty much common sense, right? Because not to mention, what if you apply the sentence, they're out of Europe for a year, and then CAS finds in their favor, and this gets thrown out? What then? What are you going to do? Build yourself a time machine, Jules, and go back in time? I mean...
Of course not. But on the other hand, you don't want CAS to rush their examination of the whole thing just to allow City to take part next season, whenever that is.
No, I take your point. I mean, there's been no evidence so far that Manchester City are kind of slow rolling this or whatever. I think, you know, the process is what it is. The CAS is going to operate via video conference. It's not like courts have all shut down. They can still do this. They were pretty confident that they were going to get us a verdict by the start of the season. I don't see why the coronavirus would have necessarily derailed that. So I think this is all going to be a moot point. But yeah, if it does become an issue, if they can't deliver a verdict, then I think City should have every right to play in the Champions League pending their appeal. Yo, so are we going to call this a day now, Jules? Are we done?
Yeah.
Should we do this again on Monday?
Let's do that again on Monday. We will do a team with players starting with C, as it's such a popular segment. So please send us all your team. Let's not forget current active players. Don't start sending me like Carlos Alberto or, you know, whoever starts with C that I can't think of right now. But current
just to clarify, is Danny Carvajal? Can I put him in my C team?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. First name Danny, surname Carvajal.
Okay. What about Roberto Carlos?
He's not active anymore anyway.
If he was active.
I guess so. Yeah, Carlos is surname Roberto.
No, because he's known as Roberto Carlos.
Okay,
fine. Nobody calls him Carlos except for some really sick commentators, the same ones that called Inter Milan Internazionale. By the way, that is my pet peeve. I hate that. I've said this to everybody. A lot of guys at The Guardian do this. It just pisses me off to no end. The team is called Inter, okay? It's how we speak in parlance.
Yeah.
Those guys who show how clever that are, well, Internazionale have taken Alexis Sanchez on loan. No, you know what? Go jump in a lake, man. Huh? You know, my wife, you know, seriously, done. Do not do that. Do not do that. Do not call Internazionale. You're just showing your own ignorance if you do that. All right, guys. Jules, I will catch you on Monday, if not before.
See you on Monday, everyone. Take care. Stay safe. Most importantly, everyone, stay safe.
Stay safe. Wash your hands. Follow instructions.